The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Thanks for being with us. We'll have Goody at the Movies today. Bill Goody, Coons Chief Film Critic for Gannett and AZ Central, with Oscars on Sunday night. I don't know about you guys, I have not had time to see all five categories. Usually every year when it's Oscars, I like to go see all the movies that have been nominated for Best Picture. I have seen Three Billboards, and I have seen Dunkirk, and I have not seen Shape of Water. I have not seen Get Out. I have not seen Lady Bird. So that has got to be on the agenda sometime over the next 3 days. I've got to go cram in three movies, or two of the three. I'm just not sure which. And I can't have a movie be 3 hours. There's just no way in my space I could burn 3 hours. I don't know about you. Eric, have you seen any of these movies yet? I'll get into the sports stuff in a minute because it is the Sean Miller day and there's some interesting stuff there and a few other things. Have you seen any of the Best Picture nominees at all?
I saw Dunkirk.
Did you see it in IMAX?
No, but I saw it at the Cine Capri.
Loud and big. If you're going to see Dunkirk, if you're like us and cramming, are you going to cram movies? I shouldn't speak for you.
I don't think so.
You don't have time. You got stuff going on.
I do.
So if you're going to go see Dunkirk, if you haven't seen it, go into IMAX or go like you did. Go to Cine Capri and go see it, because it's just not worth it on a small little screen. You are going to leave there with your head clanging. I'm just telling you ahead of time. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just it's very loud. What happens today with Sean Miller, do you think?
Oh.
Today's the day.
I know. Today is the day. I really don't have a feel on this, Brad. I think it could go either way. I mean, the school has been so silent, and there's been so little that's been talked about, at least externally,
yeah,
compared to internally. Like we talked about yesterday, now you have these different media entities questioning if he is actually really guilty of what he was accused of. So I don't know. I don't know which way it's going to lean.
Even the Pat 40 Yahoo report now, there's been some stuff there that was not quite right.
Right.
So.
And oh, by the way, they are playing a game tonight.
They have a game. And
they could wrap up the league tonight.
All right, so let's get this out front, because this is the most important part. This is brought to you by Sagicor. Sagicor Now. We say that because we're self-funded. Without people like Sagicor Now supporting us through the years, we would not be here doing it. So we appreciate them and all of our partners, every last one of you. Sagicor Now, protect what matters most when we think about life insurance. You're driving to school with your kids and you're looking around like life's really going by in a hurry and I don't have everything together. If I were to get wiped out, unfortunately, you have to think in those terms. Do you have it all protected? Do you have your family protected? Do you have everything that matters most to you protected? Log on to Sagicor Now. Get your free quote today. That's at Sagicor Now. We appreciate Sagicor Now and their support. On Sean Miller's front, I'm going to go into this a little bit more during the show, probably at 10:35, the way the show is laying out today. So the Board of Regents are meeting this afternoon. The Board of Regents have been in this deep dive behind the scenes to think that all it has been is business as usual, because there's been nothing but silence and tone deafness, in my opinion, out of the U of A athletic department. I'd say tone deafness. Above them, it's people trying to maneuver, wrangle, lawyers lined up 10 deep, all getting paid $400 or $500 an hour, whatever the term is. It's been good. It's been a good month or good week. Actually, with the Alonzo Trier stuff, it's probably been a good month now for U of A, if anybody has U of A on retainer. So there you go. It's what are the Board of Regents going to say today? I don't know what direction they're going to go. I know that if Sean Miller is exonerated today, then it's another enormous setback for journalists that have a big brand behind them that they just didn't follow all the way through and connect all the dots and all the T's. In fact, they probably, if they've researched this and there are huge gaping holes, and I don't know this because I don't know what the FBI has. I don't believe that the U of A knows what the FBI has. But if by chance they have a little bit of working knowledge of what is in there and what is fact and what is not fact, if all it is, well, the timeline doesn't add up as to what has been reported to this point, I don't think that's enough to say, well, Sean, you're fine. You're going to skate free. By now, is it Sean Miller just putting his hands in his pockets and shrugging his shoulders and saying, prove it, write me a check, I'm going to go away? Is it people behind the scenes around the Board of Regents that are saying, and those big cigar donors saying, are you kidding me? We're going to write checks to Rich Rodriguez to disappear and Sean Miller to disappear. We cannot be humiliated and embarrassed like this. What direction do they go? And if Miller is, in fact, let go, is it the end of U of A basketball as we presently know it? I believe that if you take a step back and just look through the lens at where things are with the University of Arizona, there's not a chance a year from now that this program is going to be at the top of the Pac-12. There just isn't. You've already lost your top recruit. You are going to lose Ayton. You're going to lose Alkins. You're going to lose Trier. You're going to lose Parker Jackson Cartwright. You're probably going to have some players looking around saying, man, I didn't sign up for this. I'm out of here. So rather than go through the humiliation and just have Sean stand around there and pay him, you are better off at this point to write the check and have him disappear if you're a U of A basketball fan. Oh, well, we're the U of A, and you just don't understand, and you're an ASU guy. No, I'm not. I didn't go to ASU. I don't care. You should check yourself if you're dug in that deep about your program. Because I'd say realistically, when you get to March, you have to be laser focused on going about the business at hand, which is winning basketball games, game after game after game after game. And I would say, just based off of Sean's track record, I don't know, it hasn't happened. Every year, this is the team, and every year, it doesn't work out. It seems to me to be hard to believe, because we haven't even talked about Trier returning to the team. If he doesn't return to the team, just on the floor, they're not going to win a title. If Raleigh Alkins' foot continues to be an issue, they're not going to win a title. You can't win a title on Parker Jackson Cartwright and DeAndre Ayton. They're going to go after Ayton in the postseason. Teams are going to go at him. And so if you are of this notion of this is our best chance, Brad, this is our best chance, it's over. I can sit here right now, and a month from now, you guys know exactly where I'm sitting. They're not winning a title this year. Okay, so let's just agree on that. You're not winning a title. And next year and moving forward for the next couple of years, you're not winning anything. You don't know where the NCAA is going to come down on this. You have a football program that has been a mess in the last few months. And so if you add it all up, what's the NCAA going to look at in regard to U of A athletics? You can have big cigar boosters all you want. Maybe it is time to look at U of A and say, guess what? We're becoming a football school now that we have Kevin Sumlin here. I'm not hating. I'm just being fact on this deal. You're not in a good spot at all. And if you think that standing there and I'm going to come back and fight at you, you're putting off the inevitable. You're putting off the inevitable just because you believe you currently have a team that is in place to win a championship this year. And I just don't see it. I think the outside distractions are way too deep. This is not as deep a team as it was portrayed to be at the start of the year for several reasons. There are players, when I watch them play, that have the look of, I am auditioning for the NBA and I'm just going to do my thing and I'm going to do my thing. This year, just on the court, Sean to me appears to be irritated and agitated with some of the one-on-one stuff from his team. Just me. I'm watching games. I'm not there every day. I'm just watching the process on the floor. And so if Sean is exonerated today, I think it'd be an upset. If Sean is let go today, I think by now that would already be out. If Sean were let go, I will tell you, the guy to follow on Twitter that is tightest to Sean, do you know this is, Eric, as I'm going down this path? So the guy to follow today on Twitter, because he has stood by Sean Miller in every interview that we've had him on, Sean Miller has never done anything wrong. He has been a Sean Miller defender because he covered Sean Miller in Pittsburgh. Am I getting close, Eric? Are you getting close on that one?
I think I know.
Yeah, and so there's one person that Sean, when DeAndre Ayton does the only interview I've seen this year in depth, guess who it was to? So there's certain media people that you look at today and say they're going to get the Sean Miller side of the story. You just have to decipher through what it is that they are reporting in the back channels of here's what's going on through text message, so on and so forth. So Mike DeCourcy is that guy who's that close with Sean. He's always been that close. Not being critical, just being factual. That's what it is. He's been there on Sean's side through everything. So that's the one guy I would look at on the Sean side of the street. There's never going to be a, he's a bad guy, he's done a bad job, he's done this wrong, he's done that wrong, he's done this. It's not happening. So that's the one guy I'd look at on that side. On the U of A side, you know, Hansen got crushed this week because he went on a radio show. He went over on Dan's show and Vince's show this week. And he said some stuff that he got all twisted and turned around and his fact-checking wasn't good. When we had Greg on Monday, I thought he was fine. But Greg has his people with inside the University of Arizona that will let him know, I think, in no uncertain terms, what's going on there. The national guys like Pat Forty, I don't think Pat's that tied in. When I see stuff come out of U of A, it usually doesn't come from Pat. On the agent coaching circle, those are people you look at today on Twitter. What I'm doing is giving you guys like a background on who today to follow on Twitter to see on both sides who has the insight. And then there'll be the national guys that are tied in, mostly national writers that are tied into the U of A. So just journalistically speaking, I'll be interested on how it is covered. If Sean is exonerated today, then ESPN has an awful lot of explaining to do, as does Yahoo to their viewers and readers about their reporting. If Sean is exonerated today, is it just the U of A simply digging their feet in the ground saying, no, we're not going to budge on anybody. Screw all of you. We play tonight. We're going to play bear down. We're going to go win a title. We're going to show that all of you are wrong. To me, that's the wrong move to make. And through all this, and I'll take a break, through all this, Arizona State is sitting over here, and they shouldn't get off scot-free or skate-free on their situation with their basketball team. They shouldn't. If you lose tonight to Cal, a team that has an RPI of, I think it's 220, 212 or 220, somewhere in that range the last time I checked, and you lose to Cal at home after getting swept by the Oregon schools, I mean, they've not played very good basketball consistently since December, consistently. You can say, well, look at the USC and UCLA, the wins, and then how they played U of A. And I would say that U of A pretty much had that game in control the final few minutes. Bobby's team was ranked third in the nation less than 2 months ago. And in 2 months' time, they've fallen out of the top 25. They are sitting there as a fringe team right now, one of the last few teams possibly to even get in the tournament. For those of you that want to keep going back to, well, look at what they did in November and December, I'm not saying that stuff doesn't matter. It's not a metric to go by, but it is how you finish. If you finish the season dropping, what would it be, 5 of 7? And going into the Pac-12 tournament, playing the 8-9 game, probably against Colorado. And if you win that 8-9 game, you've got to face Ayton and the Wildcats next Thursday. I mean, you're not going to have a long existence, I don't believe. Now, you could flip it around and say, yeah, they win these two games. They play Colorado. They beat them. U of A is a mess. Who knows what they're going to be like in Vegas? And maybe ASU goes on a run. They just have not shown anything consistent. And I've said all season long, my stance on on ASU has been this. Live by the three, die by the three. Hasn't been that hard. It just hasn't been that hard. If you can go get Romello White to give me a double-double, they're probably going to go a ways. If you can have Daquan Lake come in and give me 7 and 5 and a couple of blocks, they're probably going to go a ways. If your two bigs can get me just and put Scheibel in there too, those three bigs can get me to 20 points and 15 boards. So ASU should not be forgotten about either. You lose tonight to Cal, that's humiliating and embarrassing. That's the only way to put it. Speaking of humiliating and embarrassing, the NFL Combine and quarterbacks in the Cleveland Browns. That comes up next, sports360az.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sussmat. Now let's turn our attention to the Combine. So the Combine will be the overriding story this weekend. There's a couple things this weekend to look at. And that is the Oscars. We'll talk with Bill in a bit, Good Eat the Movies, about the Oscars this weekend on Sunday night. And the Combine. Some of you are going to be sitting in front of your TVs or your devices for hours this weekend. The Combine, I heard Peter King's podcast. Peter was talking about this. Peter is in Indianapolis. Eric and I talk, you know, Peter's a regular with us. We talked this last week, and I said, let's just hold off on Peter. Let him go through the Combine. I was listening to his podcast last night. There's 1,200 media people credentialed this year for the Combine. 1,200. And we've gone to the Combine before. You're at the Combine. You hear over the loudspeaker, Brett Hundley is now at table number five. And so you go to table number five. And at table number five, Brett comes. He sits down, and he's in his shorts and his Combine gear. Outside, it's snowing. It's miserable. But he's been doing all sorts of things at the Combine. And he will sit there for 20, 30 minutes, and he will have dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens repetitive coming at him with their little recorders for print, for web, TVs, cameras like us, all multi-platform. And it's really hard to get someone aside for that period of time. Peter said he was in his podcast. You should listen to it. He had Mike Mayock on, that he's bored with the Combine pretty quick because for him, it's he's there to see and get some angles. And he relies on the NFL people once the Combine is done. If you were to go to the Combine and to watch for any period of time, or if you wanted to be in the media side of things, it is fascinating. I mean, it really is. There's all shapes and sizes of people that are there from around the world to cover the NFL Combine. It used to be the Combine would have 20, 30 people there. Now it's blown up into this mega event. But do you really get that much out of the Combine? You know, for this year, the Cardinals, it truly is a year of come on, guys, get off the dime and get a quarterback done here. Whether that is a pro player of existence when free agency starts coming up in about 10 days, or if it is going through the draft process. Just because the Cardinals have the 15th pick overall in the NFL draft doesn't mean they can't screw up on a quarterback. We all remember Matt Leinart. The Cardinals swung and missed. No other way to put it. This year, the debate is it Josh Rosen or is it Sam Darnold? Who is the better quarterback for the number one overall pick? In my opinion, when I watch those two players, I myself would take Josh Rosen. That's just me. There's something about Josh Rosen that I really like on the field. I saw him make an enormous comeback against Texas A&M. I saw other games where he was just getting the snot kicked out of him and he'd still pick himself up off the ground and get back after it. I didn't see the most talent around him versus what Sam Darnold had to work with. I'm not hating on Sam Darnold. It's just if I'm the Arizona Cardinals and I'm looking at the quarterbacks to take, and if I had the number one overall pick, they're sitting there at 15. It may well be Baker Mayfield. It may well be Josh Allen. But if I'm sitting there at 15 and I'm the Cardinals, I probably am not going to reach up. If I'm sitting there at one, if I'm Steve Keim, I've shown the propensity I can trade up and make big deals. Look at the Chandler Jones move and how he went about it. It doesn't mean if you get the number one overall pick, we can go through years and years of players that have missed and teams that have missed. Let me give you an example. If you're a Cleveland Browns fan, all three of you, you've gone through, let's just go through the list. Tim Couch. Eric, do you remember Spurgeon Wynn?
Of course. Oh, yeah, he's on that list.
Luke McCown.
Yep. Josh's brother, I believe.
Charlie Fry,
former Mac quarterback.
Brady Quinn.
Of course.
Colt McCoy.
Very good Fox analyst now.
Colt McCoy.
Mm-hmm.
What's he doing now, do you think?
Colt McCoy? He's probably a coach somewhere.
Was he like a Longhorn Network guy? I thought I might have seen him at the Longhorn Network.
I don't know. It's a good question.
I'm not going to ask you it ever again because I should.
Well, it's only a quick Google search away. So
Brandon Wheaton, he was a pitcher, too.
He was.
Johnny Manziel, Cody Kessler, DeShone Kizer. So The Browns have gone through all these guys.
And Colt McCoy was on the Redskins last year. I apologize. I should have known.
Well, you should not have known that. If you know that, you need to go. You need to get outside and go for a bike ride or something. In 2016, okay. So in 2016, the Browns. I was making some notes on this. The Browns had the number two pick. And at the time, they could have taken Jared Goff or Carson Wentz. They could have taken Goff or Wentz. The Browns could have done this. Instead, they traded down. And they took Cody Kessler. Cody Kessler is 0-8 as a starter. So you have organizations that just can't get out of their own way. And then you come to the running back side of things. So Saquon Barkley is the only running back through all these mocks and watching Saquon Barkley as a Heisman voter, I was thoroughly impressed with him. But I also have to look at, give me first round pick running backs in the last few years and what have they accomplished? Ezekiel Elliott, know what he's done on the field, also know he's done off the field. Christian McCaffrey, Leonard Fournette. But could you go down and get a Kamara later in the draft? Could you get a David Johnson later in the draft? If you're an NFL GM, don't you look at what the Arizona Cardinals did with David Johnson and say, okay, here we are at the combine. Why am I looking at taking a running back up high? How often does that work out? How often does that go well? I'm not doubting Saquon Barkley. It's like, I love Christian McCaffrey last year. I'm not surprised at all. But he's a terrific pass-catching running back. And if you have that ability to go and catch out of the backfield and make plays as a receiver. It's like, I've heard Mike Mayock say this is a bad year for wide receivers at the combine. There's not too many of them. One of them we had here in studio a few weeks back, Christian Kirk. This may be a great year for Christian Kirk because there's not a lot of wide receivers to make a difference. There's a ton of defensive linemen. There's a ton of linebackers. Does that make it sexy if the Cardinals go defensive line? Am I going to sit here and bang my head against the table and say, why can't you guys go get a quarterback and build around him? I'm not going to go down that path necessarily because I have to see how it plays out. I would like to see Steve Keim trade up, and I would like to see him find a way to get Josh Rosen. I don't see any way they can get all the way to the number one overall pick. And even if they do, I just gave you the example of the Browns, and I've also given you the example of Matt Leinart. The flip side of it is when you think you can work through getting that young quarterback and you don't have anybody behind him and he doesn't work out. We've been through that mess here in Arizona. Leinart doesn't work out. Fortunately, Kurt Warner comes along. Kurt comes off the scrap heap with the Giants. We all saw what happened with Kurt in the Hall of Fame. Saw the run, saw all that stuff. Cardinals dodged a bullet on one hand. On the other hand, Kurt got, towards the end of his career when he came here, got beat up, left the game, had his faculties intact, meaning the concussion stuff didn't get to him. And we went into the Derek Anderson and no man's land of the Max Halls and John Skeltons and all that stuff. And nobody wants to be back in that place. I just find it interesting that as we're sitting here at the 1st of March that the Cardinals have yet to really tip their hand on terms of free agency. Not that I would want them to, but we're all sitting here looking at the free agent class and none of them have been linked to the Cardinals in terms of media people whose opinions I trust and respect at the highest levels, the Schefters and the Rapoports in particular. And so, and then, you know, on the local level, of course I respect Kent and what Kent can report. But unfortunately, he's fighting these national web guys and platform guys that just agents are going to go to them first in all likelihood. So what's going to happen here at the Combine this weekend is hour after hour, for some of you, are going to watch the throws of these quarterbacks. Sam Darnold's not throwing, not holding it against him. You don't know how good the wide receivers are that you're throwing to because you don't know these wide receivers if you're these quarterbacks. I do find it interesting to watch the 40-yard dash. For some reason, I like watching the 40-yard dash. I think the crowd mics, when they pick up the coaches, talking to players down on the field, there's some interest there. but I really can't take too much from it. It's like I can't take too much from all the hours and hours of interviews they're going to do with these players. These guys have now been coached up by media trainers. They're not going to say much of anything. You can actually see the guys that have not been coached up much. They're just saying, this is me, this is who I am, like me or not. But for the most part, it's I'm excited to be here, really looking forward to whatever team takes me. Please, dear God, don't have it be Cleveland. And, you know, in the case of Josh Rosen, even though he flat denies that. And so this weekend, Eric, are you going to do any combine this weekend? Any combine watching? I'm going to watch some along the way.
I'll watch a little bit. I've got a busy weekend planned doing some non-work-related things.
Non-work-related things.
I'll catch it. And the great thing about the combine is if you don't see the highlights, you can find the highlights on social media really fast.
Who do you want to see? Is there anybody you want to see?
I want to follow Christian Kirk specifically to see what he runs.
Yeah.
Because there are those whispers that he's not fast enough.
And that's the whole thing with Christian Kirk. That is it. It's not that he doesn't have good hands. It's not that is he fast enough?
Right.
So if he runs 4.4, that's not good for him.
Oh, I think that's – yeah, I think if he runs a 4.4, he's set. I mean, I think he's going to be a first-round pick anyway.
I think he is too, but I think 4.3 –
the receiver class is weak.
I got the vibe from him. He needs to run sub 4.4.
That's crazy. It's crazy.
That was the vibe I got from him when we sat here on the couch.
If you don't run a 4.4, you're considered slow for a slot receiver.
That's the vibe I got from him. Now, I could be wrong on that, but he said, I know I need to drop my time. I know I need to drop my time. That's what he said repeatedly with him working out at Exos.
And you know just as well as I do, if he puts his mind to something, it's pretty much going to happen. That's how it's been since he was a sophomore at Saguaro. So.
Yeah, I mean, he's not had people pick him apart. Like, I thought Brett was great yesterday in terms of you get on the plane knowing there's people that already don't like certain things about you. And so you're flying to Indianapolis to get off the plane to show those people who don't like certain things about you. You guys are wrong. Here's where I'm at.
It's an all-day event where you only eat two meals, apparently, according to Brett Hundley.
So the quarterback side of it, you're not as enamored with that group. You're more on the Christian side of
it. Yeah, just from a local angle.
See, I'm more...
And there's a bunch of ASU guys, too, that there have something to prove at the combine.
But I think, here's the thing on the ASU guys. They're going to have the ASU Pro Day. Which I can only imagine going to the combine, the anxiety level that they're going to feel. I thought the story that Brett had about how he walked into a room and there was nobody there from the Eagles, and he just looked into a monitor and some psychologist asked him questions, and then he got up and left. I thought that was just so insightful as to, we always think it's a bunch of coaches sitting around there with their notepad saying, so what is this like? And Brett's like, no, this is what the Eagles did back there. There's got to be anxiety in that. And so for those players to go through that and then say, okay, it's not that bad. All I have to do is fly back to Tempe, and in the middle of March, I get to show my stuff again. And we've been to pro days before. I think they're more comfortable. I could be wrong on that, but that's how I'm looking at all these ASU players. So on the other side, we've got some other things I want to get to before Goody at the Movies. A little bit more on Sean Miller and today. And, and the Suns screwed up last night. I got to get into them next. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sismat. All right, we have Goody at the Movies coming up here, so this will be a short segment. There was some basketball last night. I'll get over to the Suns and how they screwed up in a second. But Eric was out at the 6A, boy, the biggest championship game, and I usually make it, and I did not. I had other things going on last night. I just couldn't make it down to the arena. This was Pinnacle and Mountain Point. How many Division I basketball players, because Spencer Rattler doesn't count, obviously, how many Division I basketball players were on that floor last night? One?
Maybe two. Yeah. Trent Brown, a guard for Pinnacle, another junior. It seems like they're entire team or most of their core are juniors and sophomores. So Nico Mannion and Trent Brown are probably the two Division I. Trent Brown's like a lower Division I player, I think.
So I talked to a friend of mine, a hoopaholic, who was at the game last night. He said Nico Mannion was pretty good, but then he got three fouls in a very short period of time and finished the game on the bench. Did he show anything to you last night?
He did not finish the game on the bench, but he did.
Well, then I'm firing this friend who said that.
Yeah, got bad information.
Bad intel.
What Mountain Point did played right into what Pinnacle does well. So Mountain Point said they were going to press. They pressed. And basically, they just let Nico Mannion run the show. And once he broke pressure and the floor was spread, Pinnacle has so many good shooters that I think they started off 8 of 12 or 9 of 12 on three-pointers in the first half.
Wow.
And built a 15-point lead. I don't think it ever got under 10, and they just sort of they cruised.
Hurley was there?
Hurley was there.
Okay. Was there anybody else on the college front, college coaches that you could tell? Was Dan over there?
I did not see Dan.
Marley.
But I did see Hurley.
Yeah.
I did not see Sean Miller.
What are the that's funny. What is the list for Nico Mannion right now? Do you know of schools that is ASU's on that list?
ASU
right?
is on the list. He has a handful. I think he has a handful of offers. But the thing is, Brad, he's going to get the progress he made from his freshman year to the end of his sophomore year was a pretty big jump. And now he has two more years of high school or prep school or wherever he ends up going. But
do you know something I don't know?
I don't. I don't. But I do know the trend of top Arizona high school players who decide not to finish their high school careers either in Arizona or go play for a prep school somewhere.
Yeah, Marcus Howard.
Yeah.
Go to Finley. I heard Finley's already trolling around.
Marvin
trying to
Bagley.
Get...
Yeah. Nick Johnson.
Yeah. But so I've heard that Finley's already trolling around trying to get Nico Mannion. They were trying
it's
a year
not surprising.
Ago. But let me ask you this then. So if we're talking about best guards, high school guards, I saw Jared Bayless as a sophomore. By the time he was a senior, he just walked out of the court and scored 40 before warmups mentally on players. They would just look at him and melt. And he was so explosive. When I saw Mike Bibby play, Mike Bibby just walked out on the floor and said, guys, there's nothing you can do. I'm just going to beat the snot out of you. And that's what he would do. And he would do it in a different sort of way than Bayless.
Yep.
When I see Jalen House play, okay, I see Jalen House as a little bit or a lot of Jared Bayless to me. He's somebody that can get on the open floor and make these spectacular plays and simply step back and hit a three without a problem. Jahi Carson, Alex Barcelo, the Howard boys, is that where Nico Mannion is heading or is he below that?
I think by the time he's done, he'll definitely be in that conversation.
Christian Polk should be in there.
Two guys that
Joey Shaw.
That more recently, Dorian Pickens at Pinnacle, who's now at Stanford. And Casey Benson was an unbelievable high school player now at GCU. So there's been quite a few wings slash guards that have made a name for themselves in Arizona.
Okay, so but Nico, you think can get into that run?
I think so. I mean, he's so explosive. He's a 6'2" point guard that can jump out of the gym and is a really good passer, and has a really good shot, and for the most part makes good decisions. And he's still got two years left to play.
Well, and in 2 years, and I'm being serious about this, given what's going on with the conversation around the NCAA and trying to figure out the one and done. Maybe it is by the time he's a senior, he can just walk out of Pinnacle High School and go to the NBA. In some capacity, maybe, if he's that good. I've seen him play once, and then he had a broken hand the other time I showed up to watch him earlier this year. And
I saw him earlier in the year, Brad, when they played Shadow Mountain, and that was the time where some of the Pinnacle football players are just sort of rounding into their basketball form, and they did not play well. And it's interesting because Mountain Point, the team that Pinnacle handled, beat Pinnacle 81-45 back at the end of November, and this Pinnacle team is a completely different team than the one that they played right around Thanksgiving.
Did you so you didn't get to see our hometown heroes of the hardwood last night?
I saw on Twitter they won. It's unfortunate.
And there was like nobody at this game. Memphis and the Suns, and I watched for 5 minutes, and as I'm sitting there watching the clock go 4 minutes and 30 seconds, 31 seconds, 32 seconds, it's like that's 4 minutes and 30 seconds I'm never going to get back in my life. It was so bad. It was just awful basketball. And yeah, they won. Josh Jackson is starting to wake up, if you want to look at it on one hand, of he's getting better. On the other hand, this will give you the Tankapalooza idea of Memphis. They had a couple three-on-ones where they toss to Mark Gasol at the three-point line, and he throws up a paint chipper or a glass chipper from three-point country and jogs back the other way. So they end up losing. It was, okay, you guys truly are just trying to lose this game. You're 7 feet. You're not even coming close on some of these shots. You know what needs to happen in Memphis. You're a good teammate, Mark Gasol. Way to go. The Suns have Oklahoma City tomorrow night. And the Suns are making a big deal out of the 50th anniversary team. I guess tomorrow night, Amari is supposed to be in town at the game. Sean Marion is supposed to be at the game. They're giving away a Nash bobblehead, so they're going all out. It's got to be one of the few games where they're going to draw flies. But they need to lose. Just keep losing. Good Eat the Movies is next. I'm Brad Sussmat. Now, because you know what's going on in the world of sports, it is time. It is Oscars weekend. So I'm going to cut short these movies of the week and just do one of them and then get into all of it with Goody. Bill Goody Kunz, chief film critic for Gannett, AZ Central. You're actually going into a screening. What are you screening?
I am going to see Lean on Pete.
All right. And you can't
see. I don't know much about, but I'm told it's very serious.
Oh, God. Dreadful. Better you than me. Let's zip through Red Sparrow then, because that's the movie with the most buzz, and whether Jennifer Lawrence is any good in this role or not, she's been everywhere. It feels like I watched her on 60 Minutes the other night. Is this movie going to be good? Is this going to be worth seeing?
It's not especially good, but it's worth seeing pretty much. I mean, she's good. she's pretty good, but she has like a Russian accent, and she says the best line in the whole thing is with this Russian accent. She gets mad at her uncle and says, "You sent me to horror school," and she. I mean, it sounds like Bullwinkle, you know, Boris and Natasha, or something. Like she plays like a prima ballerina for the Bolshoi Ballet, and she breaks her leg in this horrible accident that they show like about 50 times, and then they it's like Joe Theismann, you know, like in Lawrence Taylor, she ends up having to be a spy. But it's a super secret kind of Russian spy called Red Spares, and they use their sex basically to get information. And then she's the whole thing is like, is she going to remain loyal to the Russians, or is she going to turn and become like loyal to the Americans? So I mean, it's okay. There's a lot of twists and stuff, but mostly she's just like, you know, she's just a big giant movie star, and she's the main reason to watch it.
All right, so this is another Black Panther weekend, or maybe Death Wish, but. But Red Sparrow, this is not going to push Black Panther, right?
I would see it 10 times again before I would see Death Wish.
I got you. Okay, so let's, because I want to save time for this. It is Oscars weekend. You and I talk about this every year, and we start with the host. Jimmy Kimmel is hosting. What are you expecting from him on Sunday night? I know your big thing is deadline. Please don't go long. They always go long. It screws up your deadline. So let's just get to Jimmy Kimmel, and what are you expecting from him?
I talked to him recently about what he's going to be doing, and he said that you plan months in advance. You start writing the show months in advance, but this year they can't. And he said he just doesn't know what they're going to do. He knows some of the things they're going to do. They're going to have to address the Me Too movement, and they're going to have to and they'll always talk about some diversity. But he said the thing is there could be like a missile headed to San Jose when we're on the air. So it's really hard to plan ahead. But he is hoping for a short show too, because I told him that it was like, I said, you know, this year is like, since last year they had the big, horrible mistake for Best Picture.
Mm-hmm.
I told him it's like the world according to Garp, the plane hit your house. I mean, that can't happen again. Right. But he said that's one way of looking at it. He said another way of looking at it is something like that is bad, but something worse than that is even better, because that, you know, everybody's talking about it. But
I get it.
But it's all kind of up in the air. He'll do his thing. He'll tell 10 minutes jokes and disappear for the rest of the night.
The Best Picture. So I've only seen Three Billboards and Dunkirk, and my wife and I are going to binge watch and go find Shape of Water, Get Out, and Lady Bird. If we're coming down to those three, which one of the three do I not need to see? Shape of Water, Get Out, or Lady Bird? If I can only get two of three, which one can I miss?
They're all good, but Lady Bird's not going to win. I wish it would. If I voted, that'd be my vote. But Shape of Water may well win. I mean, it has 13 nominations. That's the most of any movie. But Three Billboards has a lot of momentum. But there's supposedly some path to victory for Get Out. I can't quite figure out what it is. It involves the acting block being the biggest, and Jordan Peele used to be an actor, but I don't know what. But it's a great movie. They're all great. I mean, you should carve out the time to see all three if you can. But Lady Bird, which I think is the best movie of the year, is the least likely to actually win. So
okay, which one of these three is the longest? Because you know how I am. If it's above 2:30, if If it's above 2:30, I need a nap. Which one of these is like, Brad, this is 2:90, this is 2:55, you know?
I think they're all pretty short. I don't think any of them, any of them are over 2 hours, I don't think.
See, and Dunkirk to me was fine. I think you and I were there together in IMAX. It was just all around us, but I don't think it was the best piece of work that I've seen this year. Three Billboards certainly was terrific. It was great. But I wouldn't say it's head and shoulders above anything else I've seen this year.
No, I think the best picture is a real wild card this year. I think all the acting categories are pretty much, if they're not set in stone, they're close. I don't think there's going to be any upsets there. But it's just hard to say what best picture. I mean, Three Billboards has won everything going in, but the director wasn't nominated for best director, which sometimes means that won't win best picture, but that doesn't always mean that. But then Shape of Water got the most nominations, and Guillermo del Toro is the favorite to win Best Director. So it's really, you know, once again, I'll be complaining about Deadline because it's going to be right up to the last second there.
Okay, last question. There's 7,528 voting members from what I have read. You just said that you believe everything is set in cement. We're talking about Best Actor, Best Actress, Best Supporting, male and female. If that's the case, give me those four categories and who you believe is going to win.
Okay. Best actor is Gary Oldman for Darkest Hour, playing Churchill. There's no question about that. The best actress is Frances McDormand for Three Billboards. Best supporting actor is Sam Rockwell for Three Billboards. And supporting actress is Allison Janney for I, Tonya. I would not have voted for any of those. Mm. I think they were all good. I think there were people better in every category.
And I myself would not vote for anything of I, Tonya, just out of principle. I just don't care. All right, go see your screening. Appreciate the time as always. Talk later. Thanks.
All right, bye.
There's Goody at the Movies. Bill doing his thing. Have we ever not talked to... Well, there's a few times. We talked to Bill on a Thursday or Friday where he's awaiting a phone call from like Meryl Streep, and the birds are chirping behind him. But there's always something. That guy is always working. And unfortunately, he's going to be sitting there this Sunday night when the Oscars are going on. Most of us are going to be watching. I know I'm going to be watching that. Thinking of poor Bill. Bill's up against Deadline again. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. Jared Nielsen is our chairman of the board. Eric, as always, produces the great Eric Sorensen. Jordan Hamm, Haley Stasiak, Perry Cohen, our intern today. Thanks for being with us.